Hi everyone, welcome to the IKMensch podcast. Here we discuss the most cutting-edge issues that are changing our world and how businesses can create winning solutions with technology. In this episode, we're going to discuss the meteoric rise of telemedicine and its future from the man himself, the father of telemedicine, Jay Sanders. You can find the interview excerpts in our latest white paper. Please visit techmint.com for all our papers and podcasts. Thanks a lot, sir, for speaking with us today. My first question to you is, there has been an astronomical rise in telemedicine in 2020. What are your takes on the future of telemedicine and how much momentum will be sustained in the coming years? Also, how does telemedicine fit into the entire picture of the healthcare system?
Well, first you need to understand that I've been involved with telemedicine and doing telemedicine for 52 years. Okay? Since 1969 at the Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. There was some early interest from the federal government and the National Science Foundation here in the United States in the early 1970s, and they did some funding for this, and that funding ended in 1976, and it wasn't until 1991 when I developed the first statewide telemedicine system in the state of Georgia that telemedicine really began in the United States. But the thing that has hindered it throughout the years has been fundamentally the insurance companies and the federal government in not reimbursing for its use, and in many respects, the absence of the facilitation of the infrastructure, the telecommunications infrastructure capability. I recently wrote a book chapter about telemedicine, and I titled it, Sadly, It Took a Pandemic, because it wasn't until this pandemic that people began to realize, when they had no other choice, that they could use telemedicine to affect an interaction between a patient and a physician. And it was both the federal government and the insurance companies here in the United States that finally said, yes, we will reimburse for it. And the fact that primary care physicians had no other choice in terms of following their patients and seeing their patients, that everybody suddenly wrapped their arms around telemedicine. I apologize. There is a call that I need to cancel here. Okay, sorry for that intrusion. So that really has been the thing that has caused the dramatic increase in the use of telemedicine. One, the fundamental reality that patients really couldn't be seen in the doctor's office and they had to find an alternative modality. And probably most importantly, and sadly, the fact that it finally got the federal government to, reimburse for those telemedicine visits. That really was the thing that broke the camel's back.
As you've pointed out, to the rise of regulations and that it holds the key to a wider adoption, what do you think will happen on this front? Are we going to see progressive stance on regulatory front?
Yeah, I think finally everyone has seen the light with respect to its capabilities. Plain and simple. And what you also need to know is that many states, as a matter of fact, more than 30 states, have legislated what is called parity reimbursement. So in essence, what they are saying is that in their state, the insurance company must reimburse for a telemedicine consultation as if it were an in-office visit. So let me give you a classic example. In states that don't have parity legislation, if telemedicine is approved by an insurance company like United or Anthem, they might reimburse for a telemedicine consultation between a patient and a physician, something like $50. However, in those states that have legislated parity legislation, they must reimburse as if it were an in-office visit. So that would increase that payment from $50 to something like $150. That is a huge incentive. For good or for bad, that's a good incentive. I think also what has happened is that people realize, and this has been a statistic here in the United States for a long time, that prior to the embracement of telemedicine, many people used the hospital emergency department as their primary care physician. They might not have a primary care physician, or it may be after hours and the primary care physician's office is closed. They have an incidental medical problem, which in their mind they view as an emergency, which is not in fact an emergency, and they tend to go to the emergency department. Excuse me. I don't have COVID, not to worry. They tend to use the emergency department as their primary care physician. So something that might have cost them $150 to go see their primary care physician costs their insurance company $1,500 once they go to the emergency department. That's the differential that exists, unfortunately. And it is estimated that 30-40% of patients that come into an emergency department never needed to come into an emergency department. They needed to see maybe a primary care physician, but they didn't need the extensive costs of an emergency department. So it's a huge cost factor. And I think what the insurance company is going to find is that even in those states that have legislated parity and have to pay $150, that it's going to be a heck of a lot more of a cost saving for them to keep to pay that $150 and to pay the $1,500 for the patient to go to a hospital emergency department.
Incredible insight, sir. Thank you very much. There are certainly reasons for cautious optimism. My next question is on the darker side of telemedicine. As there are chances of misdiagnosis, and also there is a lack of physical diagnosis while remotely interacting. So how do you reckon the risk involved?
Well, excellent question. I think that, and apologies for this, I think that the studies have not been done yet. I think what we will find, as we have seen up to this point in time, that many patients have conditions which the doctors feel quite comfortable in dealing with over an audio video type of consultation. I should also point out that there are now over the counter, for instance, here in the United States, you can go to a company called Best Buy and literally buy medical diagnostic equipment for your home. So if a doctor feels uncomfortable about saying that the individual has a sore throat, as an example, without looking at their sore throat, there are now very simple, inexpensive diagnostic pieces of equipment that you can buy over the counter, the consumer can. So the doctor can look in the patient's throat. The doctor can look in the patient's eyes and ears. The doctor can listen to the patient's heart and lung sounds. I think what a lot of people have forgotten is the fact that the best exam room is where the patient lives, not where the doctor works. Everybody also forgets that in the days when there was simply a telephone, which for some crazy reason people are calling telemedicine today, we used the telephone a long time before we used the term telemedicine, and it seemed to work very well. Now, of course, we're applying the simple use of the telephone and calling it telemedicine. Doctors felt very comfortable in making the diagnosis. I also should point out that in quotes, the old days, and I remember as a child when I got sick and had a sore throat, the doctor came to my home. everything changed and everybody thought that the only mode of delivering care was at the doctor's office. It also turns out in one particular area in mental health care, which has been used as a huge use of telemedicine today, that psychologists who previously only saw their patient in their home and didn't feel that telemedicine was of value to them are now totally 180 degrees in disagreement with their previous thought process. They're now finding that they learn a lot more about their patient when they see the patient in their own environment, whether it's at the office or at home, than when they saw them in their own office. So I have always felt that the home is the better exam room than the doctor's office. And now that we're getting the technology to support that, I think it's going to become more commonplace. Yeah, and let me add one other thing, which may seem obvious after I say it, but it seems to not be reflective in a lot of people's thinking. When companies like Amazon came into being, you now had an alternative to going to the shopping mall. You could shop online. When Netflix first came out, people now all of a sudden had an alternative, a convenient alternative to not going to the movie theater. They could watch movies at home. It was not to get rid of the movie theater. It was not to get rid of the shopping mall. When banking allowed you to go online, you could still go to the bank, but you could do a lot of your banking online. I view telemedicine as that equivalent in those three other industries for healthcare. And rather than looking at it as a substitute for, I look at it as an addition to the capabilities that we now have from a convenience standpoint.
Excellent vantage point, sir. The comparison with Amazon is quite elegant.
Yeah, you'll be sorry you asked that question. Okay, now let's deal with reality. And this is going to be hard for a lot of people to either listen to or to accept. Unfortunately, what I'm about to say is fact. Let me play the devil's advocate for a minute to introduce what I'm going to talk about. We haven't talked about the fact that telemedicine is potentially dangerous to your health. Why would I say something like that? The reason is everybody forgets what the fundamental, most important aspect of telemedicine is. It has nothing to do with the communication infrastructure that we are using to connect the patient with the physician. I don't care whether it's a Zoom meeting, whether it's my iPhone, whether it's a megaphone, the most important smoke signals, okay? The most important thing is the message. not the communication modality that I send the message. If the message is wrong, I don't care what kind of sophisticated IT communication technology I have, the message is still wrong.
Right.
If I misdiagnose a patient who's having a stroke and say it's a thrombotic stroke as opposed to a bleed, and I give him medication which increases the bleed, that's not very helpful.
Right.
That I did it with telemedicine doesn't make it a better message. What everybody has forgotten, and what I'm about to say is factual, what everybody has forgotten is that there are more people killed on a yearly basis based upon medical errors than we have lost from COVID. Think about that. Every year. Now, why is that?
Large number.
Is there a problem with my colleagues? Is there premeditation on the part of my colleagues? Absolutely not. There is a win-lose component to this. The win is the fact that there is so much new medical information coming out from good research labs around the world that not a single physician can keep up to date. And if I'm not up to date, and if I'm using old information, and I'm still using hydroxychloroquine to treat COVID-19, I've got a problem.
Right.
I'm not going to say anything about our president. nothing needs to be said. The real problem in healthcare today has nothing to do with COVID-19, as devastating as it is. The real problem is the fact that none of us can keep up to date.
Okay,
and we need to replace the single physician at the bedside with collective expertise. And the way to do that is with AI, which I've also been trying to do for 52 years.
Okay.
And we now have the computer power to do it. We can now take all of the great information coming out of research laboratories around the world.
Right.
And the great minds, and put them together in an AI format and bring collective expertise to the bedside. So to me, the most important qualitative message that we can provide is to use AI. And that ensures that telemedicine, which was really the subject of this discussion, is valuable. The third issue relates to what we call normal vital signs. And here I am sure I will get a lot of hate mail. The idea that population health is important. To me, population health is not important. Individual precision health is important. Sensor technology has got to be married with AI and telemedicine. If you go to a doctor's office today and ask him what the upper limits of normal of the blood pressure is in an individual, he will say, oh, it's 120 over 80. Anything above 120 over 80 is abnormal. And I will say to you, that's absolutely ridiculous. And why would it say something like that? Well, here's the reason. Most women in the world have lower blood pressures than most men in the world. That's a statistical fact. That's probably why they live longer. than we do on average. My wife, as an example, has a normal blood pressure of 90 over 60. If I had a blood pressure of 90 over 60, you'd be rushing me to an emergency room in shock. But my wife's normal blood pressure is 90 over 60. And many women have that kind of blood pressure. All right, now she goes for her yearly ridiculous physical exam, and her blood pressure is 95 over 65. What do you think her internist tells her? Mrs. Sanders, oh, your blood pressure is fine, perfectly normal. And then the following year she goes and her blood pressure is 100 over 70. And then it's 105 over 75. And then it's 115 over 80. What do you think for the last 5 years my wife's internist has told her? Mrs. Sanders, your blood pressure is perfectly normal. And for the last 5 years, my wife's internist has been absolutely wrong. She's been hypertensive. The fact that she hasn't reached this so-called normative level of 120 over 80 is ridiculous. We've got to do precision medicine. Another example, let's take blood glucose level. A blood glucose of 125 or above is considered to be diabetic. But what if my normal fasting blood glucose is 75, and then next year it's 80, and then the following year it's 85, and then it's 90? As I'm going up each year, my physician is telling me my blood glucose is normal, when in fact I've become pre-diabetic and I should be treated. Medical sensors either worn or embedded or in fact circulating, nano sensors, less than 7 microns, smaller than a red blood cell, will be programmed to our genetics. We're talking some years in the future.
Great.
And we will now have precision health. We will know when you're becoming pre-diabetic, not based upon the fact that your blood glucose, fasting blood glucose, has gone up above 125, but the fact that it's gone from a normal fasting glucose of 80 to 95, you've become pre-diabetic.
Right.
And therapy will be instituted when that happens. The yearly physical exam should be gotten rid of. Sensor technology should tell us exactly when something is going wrong with us. And combined with AI, will give us specificity as to what exactly is wrong.
Right.
So, three technologies to me, although not the most important one, which we will discuss, three important technologies: telemedicine combined with AI, combined with individual sensor technology. Whether it's in our watch, whether it's in our clothing, whether it's in, our lenses, contact lenses, those will be the three critical technologies for tomorrow's healthcare delivery system.
So, in a sense, that you have raised very valid points of. That misdiagnosis and errors in diagnosis can lead to severe conditions and loss of life. So what would your suggestions be, keeping apart the AI part for now, just for the discussion, that while a lot of people are designing these platforms and the rise has been tremendous, and almost everyone has, even startups are on the lookout for developing platforms. So what would be your message? Like while designing these platforms, what should they should keep in mind? Because it should, like, I would come to the electronic health records that America started, and according to research has not been efficacious in the sense that the intention was. So like while designing these platforms, what would your suggestions would be to these people, institutes, what factors they should keep in mind so that, you know, telemedicine, the risks are minimum. And like you've already said that AI should be incorporated, but just for beginning wise, what decisions would be to these people? What factors should they keep in mind while they're, you know, designing platforms? Like, should they not be myopic and all?
I think the platforms, look at the platform we're using, Zoom. I think the important thing is that there is an assurance of privacy and security on the platform. Of course, today hackers can get into anything, but there needs to be some assurance that there is a continuous assessment of the security and privacy of the platform. But I have to go back to one thing which you mentioned and one thing which I previously mentioned. Number one, make sure of the up-to-dateness of the physician that you're dealing with. How you do that, I'm not sure I have the answer for that. At the present time, although you do know that there are a number of companies, I won't mention their names, but there are a number of companies now that are introducing so-called AI chatbots. So that if I'm the patient and want to see you as my physician, prior to your seeing me, I go through a branch logic tree machine learning algorithm that provides an appropriate differential diagnosis to you, my physician, prior to seeing me, and even suggesting types of examinations to be done and laboratory tests that should need to be done to confirm your diagnostic impression of what my problem is. So I do believe AI is now, or should be, become a component of the so-called direct-to-consumer telemedicine platforms like the Teladocs, like the American Wells, the Doctor on Demands, and so forth, and so on. As a matter of fact, I believe Zipgnosis has that. Of course, Babylon, that originated in the UK, and is now in the United States, has that type of chatbot AI differential diagnosis capability. I think you're always going to be dependent upon the quality of the physician on the other end of the platform. I don't care how good the IT is. It's really the quality of the physician. And I'm not, once again, I'm not pointing a finger at my colleagues. I'm just underlying the reality of progress. Progress being all the new scientific information that we are accumulating momentarily around the world. Right. And our inability as a single practitioner to stay up to date. What you're seeing is more and more physicians becoming more and more specialized. So they become, they know more and more about less and less. And then there's a general practitioner who knows less and less about more and more.
So I think your point is, it's like extremely important that Since the volume of research that happens, the discoveries that happen, it's really impossible to be aware and abreast with developments. And here the technology plays a critical role, especially when we're talking about telemedicine, because even in routine times, you have loss of life due to error. So with telemedicine, it's very essential that technology augments the diagnosis and the practitioner with the latest information. And I think that, that necessitates the advent of AI into healthcare if telemedicine has to succeed the way we envision it to succeed.
Yes. You also asked the question about electronic medical records.
Yes, sir. So.
What a disaster. What a disaster. We talk about electronic medical records. The routine patient that I would see who's, say, is 65 years of age, they have been seen by multiple physicians and been in multiple hospital systems throughout their life. Let's say an individual with diabetes. Okay, here in the United States, we have this ridiculous system of certified electronic medical records, none of which communicate with each other. So let's assume I'm the patient and I have previously been to a practitioner who uses electronic medical record A, and I previously been in a hospital where they use electronic medical record B, and I also in the past saw a physician who used electronic medical record C. Guess what? None of them have a complete medical record. Now, I've talked about AI being important, but AI is going to be corrupted in the absence of having all the information. We need a system here in the United States that dictates interoperability. There is only one provider that I know of who has solved that problem. I won't mention his name or his company because he actually happens to be a client of mine. So I just don't want to do that. But there is a solution out there, but for all the obvious reasons, none of the EHR companies want to embrace the solution.
Do you feel that when we envision the success of telemedicine, interoperability of systems is essential?
Absolutely. So the sequence would be that every telemedicine provider would have access, or the patient, probably more importantly, the patient would have access to their complete integrated medical record to be able to immediately provide it for the machine learning algorithm and or the patient, preferably the machine learning algorithm initially, to be able to effectively analyze the chief complaint within the context of that patient's prior medical record.
If we talk about the paradigm shift that has happened in 2020, what do you see that has transformed during this pandemic?
Well, it depends on who you're asking. If it's the federal government, I think the federal government has realized that you can provide appropriate medical care. Let me just quickly, hold on. I'm on a conference call. The federal government has realized the effectiveness of telemedicine, number one, and therefore the justification for reimbursing for it. Number two, the physician has realized that he has no alternative. And now that he's being reimbursed as if this wasn't an office visit, that this is an appropriate modality of care. And the patient, I think, for the same reason that they embraced the Amazons and the Netflix and the online banking, have realized, gee, this is an alternative to going to the doctor's office. What we have not talked about is one of the geographical issues related here. And that is, I think the people who will benefit the most are the people who have been, for reasons of geography or in many respects, have been disenfranchised from adequate healthcare delivery. So those people who have been in rural communities in which the rural community hospital may only have primary care physicians, general practitioners available. Now they have access to the specialists. This is particularly important with respect to two conditions, a myocardial infarction, a heart attack, and an individual has a stroke. These require specialty care, and they have a particular time reference in which therapy needs to be given. For instance, a patient with a thrombotic stroke needs to be treated within a certain time frame, the number of hours. It used to be only 3 hours and 4 hours. Now it's gone up to 6 hours, but they need to be treated within that certain period of time with a special chemical that dissolves the clot for them to recover. In the absence of that, they remain with a paralysis. So the fact that we're now able to transport virtually the neurologist specialist to the patient instead of having to physically transport the patient to the neurologist makes all the difference in the world. We're talking about life and death, literally, all right? The same thing exists within cardiovascular care. The same thing exists with respect to trauma care. So this is very, very important for people in rural communities. What a lot of people though forget that people in inner cities have the same geographic obstruction because they may have to take 3 or 4 different buses to get to the appropriate specialist within the inner city. So telemedicine provides a convenience, provides a decrease in costs, and also provides a life-saving capability with or without a pandemic. And I think what you're going to begin to see, as we are seeing now, is that while prior to the pandemic, you saw particular verticals in using telemedicine. You saw the neurologists using it. You saw the cardiologists using it. You saw primary care physicians using it. Now all the specialties are using it.
Right.
And what a lot of people may be surprised at is the second most common use for telemedicine today is in mental health care.
Right.
What a lot of people forget, what the most frequent use of telemedicine is, everybody will be surprised by what I'm about to say, but there's a reason for it. It's radiology. And the reason radiology is the most frequently used and nobody talks about it or even considers it is the fact that right at the beginning, when telemedicine was introduced, the federal government here in the United States said, we will reimburse for radiology, but nothing else.
Okay. Thank you for such points. Like in rural care, you like very precisely mentioned that telemedicine, the need of telemedicine for rural care is like very much, And even like you mentioned the areas like mental health, the value addition by telemedicine has been there, and therefore the rise we are seeing. Apart from some mental health, do you see any other streams? You've mentioned, but just to reemphasize, what other streams do you see the telemedicine, you know, adding very high value in specific, any other field apart from mental health?
Every specialty. I don't mean to be so quick in responding and so overbroad in responding, but that is the reality in right. orthopedics, in surgery, etc. In surgery, as an example, actually doing surgery. If I'm here, and where are you? Are you in India?
Yes, sir. India, central India.
Yeah. Especially with 5G, so there's no latency. I can literally do an operation on you from here.
Right.
Don't be worried. I saw that quizzical look on your face, but yes, I can. There are people now doing surgeries with the patient 300 to 400 miles away. So whether it's OBGYN, whether it is surgery, whether it is just a follow-up visit in orthopedics, any branch of medicine, all of it can be done. And as the latency issue, which is always going to be a problem in telesurgery, as that becomes diminished with the 5Gs and above, except when we go to Mars, and when we have some time, I'll tell you about the system that I have recommended for the healthcare delivery system for Mars at another time. Telemedicine can be used where appropriate. For just about any medical field.
Thanks a lot, sir, for speaking with us. It was truly enlightening. Thanks a lot for listening to this podcast. Our guest today was Jay Sanders, the father of telemedicine. You can get the excerpts of this podcast and of the other global thought leaders in our latest white paper. Stay tuned to TechMinds podcast for more of cutting-edge topics and analysis. Visit us at techmint.com.